What's up, everybody? Thank you for checking out another edition of Morton's Law Podcast. I appreciate everybody taking the time in their busy day to come listen to this mess that is my life and everything else that I talk about. Here recording on this March 20th, 2022, Sunday evening, watching the NCAA tournament. I'll get into that. There's a lot to get into. In pro wrestling, Scott Hall passed away this past Monday. I know it's been 6 days, but I'm still going to talk about it. Very sad. And a lot more. I know people, by the way, check me out on Twitter, Morton's_Law. And soon, more videos coming, Morton's Law Podcast on YouTube. And people ask me, what's going on with the beginning theme? Why did you change it from the Cult of Personality? And I said, simply because the Purge theme fits. It's apropos for everything that's going on in this world right now. Not only here in the homeland, but of course over in Ukraine as that continues. So yes, for this particular moment in this time of this world, easy for me to say, the Purge fits. So there's that. Big story of the week. The biggest story that I broke that I'm still going to put on Twitter because I didn't want to break. I figured out that Jeopardy made a mistake, okay? They made a mistake. I don't want to put it out there yet until this episode comes out. And then I'm going to put it all over Twitter with the sound clip and everything that you're about to hear very shortly. And here's what happened. So I'm coming home from work and I call my significant other who watches Jeopardy every night. Shout out to Cindy Bear. How you doing? So she's watching this and I always have to wait for final before we can talk. So here comes the answer. And it was pertaining to Matthew McConaughey's first words ever uttered on screen. And the question was, it was basically saying that he said the words, all right, all right, all right. And guess what? They were wrong. They were wrong. Check it out for yourself, in fact, okay? I know I'm probably going to get in trouble for playing this long audio clip, but I'm going to play it nonetheless. Here is the scene. Matthew McConaughey's first scene in the movie Dazed and Confused. Check it out for yourself.
Hey, hop in, man.
Hey, man, who's car?
You know Wooderson?
Oh. How's it going, man?
Hey. Pretty good. How's it going with you?
Say, man. You got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did. All right.
See, I told you. They got it wrong. Now, Jeopardy didn't do their proper research. And there was an interview McConaughey had done in 2014, I guess around the time he won the Academy Award, in which, of course, he went on stage and did the all right, all right, all right. So he believes in his mind, or at least this is how this is brought to me in terms of my research that I've done. And if it's bad research, I apologize, that he believes those were his first words uttered on screen. And he talks about it in the interview that he was he had just listened to a song from the Doors and Morrison said those words in so many ways and he just went on and he did it. And that's how he became famous because he was very clever and a lot of the things he said was ad-libbed. But yeah, they got it wrong. He got it wrong. And I'm going to put this out there to the universe to know Jeopardy got something wrong. So there. Yeah, that was fun. But, oh, well, it happens. By the way, I'm still watching this movie, Dazed and Confused. The first time I watched it, or tried to watch it, I was tired. I was upset, depressed. And I didn't get it. I wasn't enjoying any of it. Going back to watch it again now, because I didn't even finish it the first time. I got through like 40 minutes. I was like, this movie's so overrated. I didn't get it. But watching it a second time, I'm starting to appreciate it a little bit more. Not done yet, so maybe in the next episode I'll come back and give you a full thought on that entire movie. But Rotten Tomatoes, 90%. The viewers, 80-something percent. When I first watched it, I was like, wait, this is nothing compared to like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Another movie about the 70s and stuff. But it's growing on me, I'll say that. So many people think this pandemic is over. They really do. It's incredible. However, China just recently locked down millions of their own people because of this new variant that has come about. And here in New York, they're starting to write articles. I'm reading it. Hey, this variant is here. This other version of Omicron is here, and it's impacting everybody. And the numbers are starting to rise. Cases are starting to rise. And listen, this isn't over. It's sad that people think it's over. It's like people have moved on already from this. They don't even think it's a pandemic anymore. But hey, the unvaxxed will keep dying. And I guess, I don't know, more shots are coming. I mean, they're talking about another booster for people who are vaccinated to prevent us from getting what the unvaxxed are going to get, which is eventually a grave. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I hate when people say, oh, it's okay now. Everything. No, things can get worse before they get better. It's just a lot of ignorance out there. It's sad. So Pete Davidson is not going to space after all. He canceled his plans to do, I guess, what is being considered a vanity project from Jeff Bezos. And what I'm reading is that speculation is that he opted out of this trip. Well, now he's been getting torched on Instagram from Kanye and this whole Kim thing, which is a total disaster and a big mess. But Bezos has been having issues with Amazon workers. A lot of them have been on strike, or a lot of them are just like trying to fight for their rights and more and higher wages. And a lot of it has even impacted here locally in Pete Davidson and I's hometown of Staten Island. So people, there's a lot of online speculation that Davidson pulled out because of this reason. Who knows if that's true or not? Because we have a warehouse here on Staten Island for Amazon. But I'm sure Pete must be disappointed, though, that he's not going to go into space and reconnect with his alien siblings from the planet. What the fuck is that? Nah, Pete's cool. See, I I've said this before, I'll say it again. I don't have a problem with Pete. I have a problem with, now it could be ironic the way he does his comedy in terms of he hates Staten Island, he dumps on Staten Island, but we know he kind of loves Staten Island. And then the fact that he looks like Staten Island, it's just, that's the only thing I don't get. But it's for his comedy, I get it. And then, oh, that's right, the other part, he then decided to get Kim Kardashian, her name branded on his chest. I have not seen this, nor do I want to see this. I know he was going on this thing about getting tattoos removed from his body for whatever reason. I guess just maybe to get new ones or to get branded now. So that's his decision. That's what he does. Now, the New York governor, no, not Cuomo, he's gone, thankfully. Kathy Hochul is now pushing to change the bail reform, which is significant. Now, she's going to run again, obviously, and she's being opposed by a couple progressives, including Jermaine Williams. And listen, this has to be done. Now, I know the opposition is strong, especially from Mr. Williams, who claims that a lot of these crimes that are happening have nothing to do with bail reform and such and all this hot air that I don't want to listen to, because when the reports are coming out and the people who do the proper research that the last person who got arrested, and it happens every day now, has 30 priors and is still walking the street. So what's the problem with that? The judge has to have this person locked up. They can't be back on the street. And that's the biggest problem and concern, is that you're just opening up the door for all these criminals to go commit more crime, because at the end of the day, they know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen to me? I'm going to go back to prison and get out again. And you know, I've been repeating that ad nauseum, if you go back to 6 months ago when I was doing episodes, but it's brutal. And this is a good segue here, because I just learned this earlier today on this Sunday, March 20th, that a gunman opened fire at a festival in Texas, no surprise. And I mean, thankfully no one was killed. I know people were hit, and unfortunately the gunman was not killed by police, as he should have been. However, I'm sure if he were black, he'd be dead right now. So he was probably given a key to the city. and all the right-wing zealots will praise this guy for being a hero. Because, of course, they need their guns, and they need to show everybody that they have them. Insane. Insane what is going on. Not only here, but around the world. So many stories to get into that I can't even talk about just because this podcast needs to come to an end at some point. But it's just like, it's crazy. So I have a new goal in life because I've been watching these Modelo commercials, which are pretty inspiring. I mean, Damian Lillard, a tattoo artist. I saw, I think, one guy was it an MMA fighter? I should know his name, but I forget it right now. There's just so many inspirational commercials, and I'm like, why can't that be me one day? If I do make it, whether it's this podcast or stand-up comedy or any way, shape, or form, I would love to be a Modelo commercial because I do have the fighting spirit. And I am a lion. Also Leo, by the way. So that fits. So yeah. Everybody help support me and get me that Modelo commercial one day. Let's go, people. So St. Patrick's Day, of course, was this past week. What was that, on Thursday, I think? I mean, it's, you know, just another excuse for an ethnicity to embarrass themselves. I mean, it's just bad. The Irish, of course, have to have their day. And, you know, the shirt, Kiss Me, I'm Irish. Well, I'm going with my new shirt, which is Eat My Crusty Taint, I'm Irish. So, yes. Morton's Law Podcast. Thank you guys again for supporting it. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to talk some sports and then wrestling and much more back after this. Welcome back to Morton's Law Podcast here on this Sunday, March 20th. Checking out the NCAA tournament. Duke up by 4 here in the second round against Michigan State, second half. I just want to see Coach K go out again. That was great, by the way. I didn't talk about it. I know I haven't been a big NCAA guy this year, but when Carolina went into Cameron Indoor Stadium and just took a shit on midcourt for Coach K's final home game, that was amazing. And now, again, I mean, they've lost a lot recently in second round action. They've had a lot of bad exits in this tournament over the last several years. So would not be surprised. Michigan State, Tom Izzo, of course, always finds a way in these early rounds to advance. And here they come again. Look at this. 4-3. Ooh, missed it. So before we get into that tournament completely, I just wanted to talk some Yankee baseball here. You know, I think if you're a fan of the Howard Stern Show, remember back in the day when all callers would basically, hey, Howard, how's it going? F Jackie. That was a thing for Jackie the Joke Man Martling. I think if you live in New York City now and you call a radio show, sports radio, whether it's FAN or ESPN, you should just start by saying F Cashman. Because that's what it's come to with the New York Yankees. Brian Cashman, F you, buddy. It's time to go. It's sad. The Yankees and Cashman made another trade, bringing in over-the-hill Josh Donaldson. They get rid of Gary Sanchez, Gino Urshela. They did acquire somebody else whose name escapes me. But I know he's going to be the starting shortstop. I should know his name. I have a fantasy draft coming up. By the way, I have a lot of research that needs to be done in a two-week window for this fantasy draft. I was just looking over some of the players. And yeah, I don't know a lot of people. But I will quickly because I am a two-time champion, so I will learn that fast. But how about that? Then the Twins, they get rid of Donaldson, and then they go sign Carlos Correa. So a player that Yankee fans wanted. Now, granted, the Yankees are loaded in the farm system, top 10 actually in baseball, and they have a lot of people coming up. So, I mean, it's just a stopgap is what it is until the players are ready, until the Yankees think they're ready, which is always a problem because Esteban Florio, who people say is overrated, has been supposedly one of their better prospects over the years, but is still there. And I think oftentimes the Yankees leave prospects down there way too long. I mean, think about it. Sanchez and Judge didn't come up until they were 24. And that's the problem. You want to win now, you go spend this money. Now, regardless of people saying, oh, well, the Steinbrenners don't want to spend as they used to, the payroll is still, what, second in baseball behind the Dodgers? Or is it third now? Excuse me, it's third. The Mets actually are number two. How about that? The New York Mets, of course. I mean, different owner now spending money. But regardless, the Yankees aren't poor. It's called managing your money correctly, not having these bad contracts the Yankees always take on. And Donaldson's another one, although I'm not sure when it expires. I mean, he's up there in age, but it's still just, it's like F Cashman. That's it. As I said last episode, the Yankees aren't going anywhere. They'll make the playoffs most likely. I mean, look, the Red Sox are dominant, but I'm not excited. It's fun. All right, this is funny, and I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for this again. But I was talking to a coworker who's a Mets fan, and I was thinking about the Mets' history with injuries. And I know Sterling Marte has also a history with injuries, especially last year on my fantasy team. And I asked my friend, I said, hey, coworker, I said, what's the deal with Marte? Is he healthy right now? And he goes, yeah, he's fine. And then as I'm doing my research for the fantasy draft, I see a note next to Marte's name and I click on it and it goes, he's day to day with a mild strain of the oblique, and the Mets expect him to take swings soon. And I started laughing hysterically from so many different aspects, just thinking about the history of the Mets injuries with the medical staff, which has always been a joke. The fact that DeGrom was supposedly, quote-unquote, healthy all last September, but didn't pitch. And now you got this guy Marte already. And then my joke was this. It's like, yeah, the Mets say soon he'll be taking swings. And that means July. It's like, what is going on? I was a good laugh. I was hysterical for about 5 minutes just thinking about all that. But it would be apropos for the Mets if they have the team that can actually compete. And then everyone goes down again. By the way, I'm going to die for those comments. Yeah, Mets fans out there. Sorry, people. So this was a bit surprising to me. Chris Bryant, who went over to the Giants last year, is gone. And he signed with the Rockies. And no one thinks the Rockies have any promise or future. And it just made very little sense to me in why the Giants wouldn't bring him back until I did the research. Now, the Giants are like top 15 in payroll. I think they're at $140 million. They could have easily brought him back. However, you know, if a team's going to overspend, I mean, he's going to get now $17 million and $26 million and $26 million over the course of the seven-year deal the Rockies gave him. So, you're like, when you look at the numbers, you're like, well, is he really worth it? I mean, if you look at the numbers specifically with the Giants last year, what, he had 7 home runs on 182 bats, 212 plate appearances, on base percentage like 344. Nothing that would excite you. Just very average to mediocre numbers. Now, I know San Francisco, that park, it's not conducive to hitters, but it's not worth $20 to $25 million as he's going to make over the next 7 years. Now, in Colorado, listen, everyone knows what happens when you go there. You turn into a Hall of Famer. So that could easily happen for his career at the age of 30. He could hit 40 for the next 5 years. But I don't know. I mean, I think if you're a Giants fan, you want to put that money out there and just hope maybe he has better road numbers than he has at home, and then the Giants are a better team just because just to compete more. But I get it. I get not wanting to spend that money when you look at his numbers were even on the decline in Chicago before being traded. So I learned that I have the number 3 pick in my fantasy draft, and I have no idea what I'm doing with it. Of course, I have to see who 1 and 2 goes to, but there's so many guys out there and so much unknown with this upcoming draft. I have a lot of homework to do. So getting back to the NCAA tournament, briefly touched on it there for a moment. A lot of stuff has happened in these first 4 days. Gonzaga, the big headline, survived yesterday. I mean, that was a scare. Down 10 to Memphis. I mean, they came back pretty quickly in the second half, and they really weren't in danger late second half, so it was a good run out of the gate. But I didn't think they were going to lose that early. Memphis is okay, but the best part, though, was the Drew Timmy post-game interview on court, where he was clearly trying not to tell the reporter or the interviewer what he actually said, so he had to PG it up, if you will. Like, he says, he goes, I don't give a flying F. This is his speech at halftime to the, you know, he goes, He goes, we're not going out like some, and he pauses. He goes, like some soft guys. You know, you probably said some fucking bitches. We're not going out like pussies. We're going to win this fucking game. So yeah, that worked, that speech. And, well, you know what? I should have led with this, and I apologize to the locals here in the tri-state area. The biggest headline of this 4 days was number 2 Kentucky going out to number 15 St. Peter's from Jersey City. And wow, that was a remarkable, like one of the best Cinderella stories in the history of this tournament. And then to just piggyback off of that, St. Peter's ended up beating Murray State on Saturday, and now they're going to be one of 16 teams next week in the Sweet 16. That's incredible right there. I mean, that's just to do what they did, it's unheard of from that conference especially. So credit to them. And the other shocker was number 8, the team I root for, North Carolina Tar Heels, upsetting Baylor in overtime Saturday. North Carolina was on fire in the first half and then early second half. I mean, everybody was just clicking. It was an incredible, I mean, Brady Manick, the transfer from Oklahoma, who I call Teen Wolf, was on fire. Baylor's Joe Dirt, Matt Meyer, was in foul trouble. And I mean, Teen Wolf went off. He was burying threes. He was getting fired up on the sideline with his teammates until the following happened. Carolina's up 25 in this game. I mean, it's a total destruction. Around the 12-minute mark or so. And then Manick throws an elbow accidentally as he's getting a rebound. Now the rule, which is, it's so hard. I mean, obviously there's no intent to throw this elbow. He accidentally threw it, but under the rules in terms of the force and the contact, it wasn't even a flagrant 1. It was a flagrant 2, and he was ejected. And that hurt because Baylor made a run almost instantly. That lead went from 25 to 12 like that. And it's like, wow, we're in a game now. And then Caleb Love, who, like I've said recently, is Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know what you're going to get out of this guy. He fouled out. And which was crucial because he's a great ball handler, if anything. And when Baylor started pressing, Carolina could not handle the press. I mean, that was turnover after turnover, leading to three-pointer after three-pointer. I mean, look, RJ Davis ended up being the hero in this game with an incredible shot in overtime. And he made some clutch shots also in the first and second half before overtime. But, I mean, the key here was that when this game got to overtime, you're thinking Baylor's going to win this easily. That was my thought. I was like, Carolina's done. They are done. Because Armando Bacot missed so many crucial free throws in the last minute of this game that would have put it away without overtime. And that was tough. Because as a Carolina fan, you're like, okay, we just blew this 25-point lead. And now we're going to lose in overtime and get crushed. And some way, somehow, Carolina dug down deep with a limited roster. Keep in mind, they don't really play more than 7 or 8 guys. So they're going to guys off the bench that you've never heard of. Like this guy Styles, who came in, even had a clutch 3 in overtime, had multiple key rebounds in the second half. I mean, it's incredible the performance that they got from people you probably never heard of. So I was impressed as a fan. I mean, you know, Baylor, of course, national champions. They go out, no chance of back-to-back. And, hey, Carolina gets UCLA, who had a minor. You know what? It's not an upset because, let's be fair, they come from the major Pac-12. And St. Mary's comes from the West Coast Conference with Gonzaga. But a lot of people really thought St. Mary's had a team to advance past this round. And maybe even further. A lot of people like St. Mary's. Now, UCLA, of course, the experience of being here, not with everybody. I know people left, but they were in the Final Four. They lost to Gonzaga in overtime, 93-90 last year. So they were here, some of those players. And that was probably a bad draw for St. Mary's because this game wasn't that competitive. I mean, UCLA didn't dominate, but they controlled the game. So they advance, and Carolina's going to get them. So, I mean, hey, house money, like I said. I said Carolina's playing with house money the entire tournament. Not only did they kill Marquette by 30. I mean, that was a destruction I didn't even talk about. Then they survived Baylor's comeback. Kansas also, just in terms of the surviving, did it again. Creighton had them on the ropes. Creighton came all the way back, cut it to 2. And then they had some really bad turnovers and poor decision-making in that final minute. Kansas held on. Michigan, 11 seed Michigan with the upset over Tennessee. Tennessee looked really good. A lot of people thought Tennessee was underseeded at 3. People said Tennessee could have easily been on the 2 line. And in their first game, they won by 35. They looked dominant. It was nothing like you would go, oh, well, they're not that good. And in Michigan, again, a team who's been here in recent years, probably not the same players. And they barely got into the tournament. Let's be honest. They had to do the play-in game. They won that. But, you know, they were, what, 17-14 on the season? So they got in because the RPI was strong. And the conference, you know, of course, got 9 teams. Speaking of the conference, how about Rutgers, man? That was an incredible play-in game. By the way, I was wrong. Michigan didn't have a play-in game. It was Rutgers and Indiana that did. I apologize for that. But what a play-in game for Rutgers. I mean, to go to overtime, they had so many chances too. Ron Harper Jr. I mean, so many guys hit big shots. And you're like, oh, they're gonna find a way to win this game. But no, Notre Dame was just that much better in terms of hitting that extra clutch shot, getting that rebound. Notre Dame dominated the glass in that second half. I mean, they probably lose the game easily if they don't get second chance points. But yeah, shame for Rutgers because they that was a fun game to watch. And in terms of the, here we go. Look at this. Michigan State came back and tied it at 65, 5:40 to go. Could Coach K go out again early in this tournament? We'll see. Nova won earlier. Villanova advances to the Sweet 16 also. And, of course, there's a slew of games on the docket tonight. So that wraps up sports. Not much to talk about in terms of the NFL. I mean, I talked about Davante Adams last week and what Mitchell Trubisky now with the Steelers. So that's a good deal for him. And that's that. Morton's Law Podcast going to come back. Don't have a lot of wrestling to talk about, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Back after this. Tune in every Monday night at 10 p.m. for the Absolute Truth Show on Blog Talk Radio. Join the Hot Rod, Sean Black, and Lady T as they give you the truth on current events, politics, and everything in between. That's Monday nights at 10 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/theabsolutetruth100, where they tell it like it is.
In my lifetime, I've learned hard work pays off. Dreams come true. Bad times don't last, but bad guys do.
Morton's Law Podcast, welcome back. That was really sad and tough to listen to, but I mean, that was just a great quote from Scott Hall, the two-time Hall of Famer, who unfortunately passed away Monday, was taken off life support. I mean, it's just so sad what happened to him. I mean, he had complications following hip surgery that led to multiple heart attacks and just brutal. I mean, he reportedly was still battling his addiction. And according to Sean Waltman and DDP, they were still trying to get him straight. Apparently, the pandemic really set him back mentally, just being home alone drinking. And that's sad to hear. And according to Waltman, when he broke his hip, he was down on the floor for days before DDP found him. I guess he couldn't get to a phone, and DDP thankfully went over and checked on him. But, you know, those hip surgeries, a lot of people say that once you get hip surgery, that's it. Your life is almost over. Just something happens with this hip surgery. He's not the first one, but it's absolutely heartbreaking when you hear that he was on the floor by himself for days. I mean, that's devastating. It makes you think about your loved ones and always check on them. Just check on, you know, make that phone call every other day if you can to anyone of a certain age who could easily fall and be in that situation. You know, it's sad. But Kevin Nash had an incredible quote. What a quote he had. I mean, I'll read it for you here. You never realize how much you love someone until you can't. That's deep. I don't know if he got that from somebody, but that is a deep quote right there. And I mean, he clearly was broken when they had to pull the plug. And I actually heard that Hall lived for hours after they pulled the plug. That's how much of a fighter he was. But Scott Hall, two-time Hall of Famer, no longer with us at 63. That's just, it's tough. What a career he had, too, when you think about it. I mean, of course, everyone's going to point to the ladder match he had with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 10. Just one of the more epic ladder matches you'll ever see. And when you think about where he started and his look and how it changed over the course of just a couple years, I mean, Scott Hall went from being big Scott Hall, big, tough, looking Texan kind of guy, starting in Florida, I believe, and then moving on to where I had first saw him, which was the AWA teaming with Kurt Hennig. Big Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig. And I mean, he looked like he had the Magnum PI look. That's what Scott Hall looked like. And then out of nowhere, he vanished for a year or two. And then he popped up in World Championship Wrestling as the Diamond Stud, which he was also with Diamond Dallas Page. It was called the Diamond Mind, and Scott Hall was with that. And then shortly thereafter, his character, by the way, was very similar when he became Razor Ramon that he was in WCW as the Diamond Stud. It was almost looking the same. They just changed the way he spoke and everything like that. But yeah, Razor Ramon, of course, and then, you know, when you think about his career, he and Kevin Nash were in the same company for the majority of their careers. When they went from WCW, then they went to WWE, because when Vinnie Vegas was an epic fail, along with Oz, Kevin Nash followed Hall to WWE, and then eventually they left together to go back to WCW. And then they did the New World Order, of course, with Hulk Hogan. And then they just had another lease on life with their career, how incredible that run was, and how WCW just dominated pro wrestling for the course of, what, 3+ years? And, yeah, Scott Hall, and I believe Shawn Michaels was recently quoted as saying Scott Hall had such an impact on his business and he never needed the title. Never. Talk about guys who never needs a title. Scott Hall is one of the top guys on the list who never won the big title. Of course, he was Intercontinental Champion. But in WCW, he was never, I don't even think he ever had a world title shot. I could be wrong, but he just didn't need it. Guys like Roddy Piper, Jake the Snake Roberts. There's so many guys who just didn't need it. And he's really at the top of the list right there. Just, what a career. I mean, it's sad what happens to wrestlers, though, but listen, there's so many of them that's gone. There's not many left. There's not many left to talk about who fell victim to drug abuse, alcohol abuse, everything. So, rest in peace, Scott Hall. Moving along, AEW. Well, you know what? Before I get into AEW, I gotta talk about it because it's been rumored now for multiple weeks, ever since Cody left AEW, that he was gonna sign with WWE. He was going to sign. The rumors kept running rampant. Then they cooled off because he didn't show up at the Jacksonville Raw. So everyone's like, wait, Cody doesn't come to Jacksonville Raw. Well, then he didn't sign. Now, new reports say multiple important key sources, by the way. So this is not take it with a grain of salt. There's more credible sources. Mike Johnson from PWI says that he is signed. He actually signed 10 to 14 days ago. And that he will be at WrestleMania to wrestle Seth Rollins. So that is set in stone. Now, whether or not they're going to bring him out before then, we don't know. But he will be there. And yeah, nobody cares. Nobody cares. I'm sorry. Listen, let's be honest. I mean, Cody will do zero to pop a rating. Attendance figures. I mean, what is he going to do? Is he going to really help WrestleMania sell? Come on. I mean, Peacock buy rates or buy numbers, whatever you want to call it. I mean, no one's going to be throwing more money at WWE network-wise because Cody's there. It's just, it's like, who cares? But I guess they're going to do whatever they can with him because WWE is desperate for anything. I mean, can it be a flash in the pan? Can something happen creatively to make it interesting? Perhaps. I don't know. So, that's the match. By the way, with his, what is that show called? The Big Show? The Big Whatever Show on TBS with this stupid game show that nobody watches, I imagine, where he's a host. Now that he's gone from AEW, will the network executive say, okay, well, you can't be on the show now? I don't know how that's going to work. But wouldn't it be funny if they actually got The Big Show, now Paul White, of course, to be his replacement on that show? That would be funny. I mean, look, how could you not have Captain Insano on a game show? That's just perfect. How many people remember that? Waterboy. Oh, that's funny. All right, so here we go. AEW. I talked about this last week. I was like, what's going to happen with this Wardlow match against Scorpio Sky? What could happen? Because we know, of course, Wardlow cost MJF his Dark Collar match against CM Punk. I didn't think Wardlow was going to just straight up win because I didn't think they wanted to build this so-called winning streak of Scorpio Sky, which, by the way, I found out is now over a year. So the man hasn't lost a match in a year. I'm not going to go do the research because this would be a long research project to find out how many matches he actually won on Dynamite or Rampage versus the YouTube show. I mean, come on. When you're going to tell me a guy's undefeated and I rarely see him on your big shows, what does it mean? So just put him in a title match then. Why did he not have more appearances is even a greater question. Why was he not just beating anybody to get established so the streak meant more when you put him in a match to win the title against Sammy? It's just like they did this poorly. This was poorly done. I've given Tony Khan credit a lot lately, but this is bad. So back to MJF. And I thought, okay, well, it would make sense for MJF to cost. And look, it's the logical thing to do for him to come out in some way, shape, or form and cost Wardlow the match against Scorpio Sky. And that exactly happened. First, you had Sean Spears come out. Wardlow was distracted. And then MJF came and hit him with the ring. And he went back in and Scorpio Sky hit his move and then rolled him up for a pin. So, again, it's predictable, but that's the route they had to go. And then Wardlow ended up fighting people off until the numbers game played a part. And MJF got the best of that situation. So now, this upcoming Wednesday, we're going to hear from MJF and everything that's going to happen going forward. We'll find that out. But it was okay. I mean, it was a good spot. That's what they had to do. The next match was the main event. I'm going to go back. I'm just bringing up in terms of what caught my attention headline-wise. Was Thunder Rosa against Britt Baker for the women's title in a cage this time. Now, we talked about what happened at the pay-per-view and how Hayter and Rebel was a factor in the decision. And then, of course, Thunder Rosa then had this number one contenders match, which was absurd, against Layla Hirsch that she won and then gets another title match instantly, which that was, again, weird. So the match was bloody. I mean, Britt was bleeding all over the place. It was a good brawl. It was, you know, minimal wrestling. But again, it's a feud. I get it. I don't need to have a scientific match in a cage. So they went at it hard and it was good. I mean, there was never any interference from, you would think, like, even though there's a cage, Rebel or Hater could have still come down and try to distract Thunder Rosa, which they didn't do. And I don't think they did. Did I fall asleep during the match? I don't think any of that happened. But no, it was good. It was good. And listen, I said, for them to go to this extreme to get her to become number one contender so soon again, and then, of course, this is her hometown, if you will. I mean, originally from Mexico, but by way of San Antonio. Great crowd on hand. And yeah, they put the title on her, and I was not surprised. They had to do it. It would have made no sense to go to this extreme. To be fair, while it made sense, it was very predictable, as was the MJF. So I guess they just, look, some things you just know is going to happen. You have to live with it. But it was good, and she deserved it. She's worked hard forever. And by the way, great storytelling. Again, tip my hat to Tony Khan, because this match was exactly, I believe, a year to the day in which they had the Lights Out match. So when you talk about the feud coming, I mean, the culmination of the feud with this blow-off, just so perfectly done. I mean, what more can you say about that? To have Thunder Rosa win the title. So, kudos, Tony Khan. The Jericho Appreciation Society. I talked about it last week briefly. It's not good. Okay, it's not good. By the way, I had seen online that Jericho apparently was going back at fans because he didn't like what they were saying about it. Because it's, let's be honest, I mean, we don't know what future Daniel Garcia has in his business because he's still relatively young. But 2.0, who now have new names, courtesy Chris Jericho, are jobbers. And they've been portrayed as such, even in this company, going back to NXT, you name it. And Jake Hager, no one ever takes any... Let's be honest about Jake Hager. They talk about how he's undefeated in mixed martial arts. He's a perfect record. Now, granted, he's fought nobody, but still... He's undefeated. Yet when you look at his AEW record, he has like 17 losses. It's crazy. I forget the number exactly, but the man loses so many matches. But he's better at real fighting? I'm so confused by that. So he's a joke. Let's be the way he's portrayed. And then this promo just went on and on. It's a joke, first of all, because they still come out. Jericho's supposed to be a heel, yet he still enjoys the fans singing his song, which is just he needs to change the music. If you're going to turn heel, change the music. But no, you still need this adulation from the fans. It's ridiculous. I don't get it. I don't get Jericho. I mean, he's clearly having this midlife crisis, and he doesn't know what he wants. Although, credit to him, he did get in shape. I mean, he was bloated well last year, but this year... He looks like a different person, so good for him on that front. But I mean, this whole sports entertainment, which was the gist of this promo, and everyone basically said they're sports entertainers, not wrestlers, and they're gonna go after wrestlers and beat up wrestlers. And well, then if that's the case, doesn't it sound, it makes sense? And I'm gonna talk about their match in a second, but what two guys better than to go after would be Moxley and Danielson? So could that be the next feud with Regal? I don't know, Regal, I don't think, can wrestle, but I'm sure Moxley and Danielson are going to have more people in their stable to go up against Jericho's stable, if that makes sense. But before I forget, even Jericho on commentary on Rampage, it's a joke, because he's putting over this sports entertainer stuff, and then he's at the same time trying to be a straight commentator. It's bad. Like, a lot of the commentating doesn't make any sense, because you're a character. And yet, now you're trying to play a straight commentator at the same time. Taz even does the same thing. He kind of goes back and forth. The straight commentator putting over his faction. It's like, it's bad. I don't know. So this Moxley and Danielson match, it was just like, okay, I get it. They're coming out here to show that they're dominant. They're going to beat people up and such and such. But it ended up being a showcase for Wheeler Yuta. And I don't have a problem with that. You know, but it was like too long. The match was 12 minutes long. You don't realize how long 12 minutes is until you just keep watching a match. Go watch that match again. Like, How many comebacks did they need to have? Now, granted, they dominated most of the match, but they were still getting a lot of offense, Mr. Yuta and Chucky T. But it was just, they finally won, Danielson and Moxley, but the commercial breaks, like every match on AEW has to go through a commercial break to get the picture in picture. It's just like, I don't think any match has ever ended before the commercial break. And then you had the post-match with Wheeler Yuta and Mr. Regal, which was good. That was good because Yuta clearly had like this amount of respect for Moxley and Danielson, and perhaps he heard the message of them taking guys under their wing and training and making them better wrestlers. And he gets into the ring and he gets in Regal's face and Regal slaps him the same way he did Moxley and Danielson at Revolution. And then basically it got weird there for a moment because it was like, well, okay, why don't he just leave the ring, or why don't they shake his hand, or why don't they just embrace, or not even embrace, but I don't know. That's going to, I think, lead to Wheeler Yuta joining them, which I think makes sense, but that kind of went on too long also on top of the match. A lot of like just head-scratching moments in AEW lately. And by the way, how about this? How about Regal? Remember last week I talked about Regal apologizing for going over his time cue on his initial interview on Dynamite last week, now 2 weeks ago? And the thing is this, Tony Khan came out and said, oh, he apologized, which was cool, but people's interview time got cut. I'm thinking, why'd you cut their interview time? How about cut some of these matches down? Why would you? That's more important to me is hearing people talk about to build a match and versus this 12-minute match could have easily been 8 or 6. You know what I mean? Like, still, Will Yuta can still have a showcase in 6 minutes. Again, go watch matches and see how long they actually are. It's a lot. So, Jeff Hardy spoke out. By the way, he was there on Dynamite and Rampage with brother Matt. And they got some interaction, of course, with Sting and... By the way, anything involving Andrade now is just bad. Let's be fair. Private Party, it's bad. It's like lower level. I don't want to call it indie because it's not, but it's just no one cares. It's an instant channel changer. I mean, if it was competition, you'd be turning into that when anytime they appear on television. Now, Jeff Hardy clearly did help out because he did pop a rating. I talked about their previous rating from the pre-show and then the post-show of Revolution, their numbers dropped. While the demo dropped in that key demo rating, the 18 to 49, they actually gained 50,000 viewers back. So they were closer to 1 million again. And I'm sure that's attributed to Hardy. Just older people watched. The older people came to see Jeff Hardy over the age of 49, I guess. But yeah, he talked about what happened in WWE and how bad that situation went down. For those unaware, it's like he goes to a house show and he just left the ring and went into the crowd, and WWE immediately thought he was using again. And he's like, oh, take a drug test. And he's like, what? No, why am I going to take it? I know I'm not using again. I'm not going to take a drug test. So they give him an ultimatum, and then he says, fine, I'm gone. They fired him, let him go. And then they actually, you know what? I stand corrected. He took the test, still left. Test came back negative. Then they tried to apologize to him and then offered him like this sweet deal at WrestleMania. We'd have a match in the Hall of Fame at the same time. It was a really bizarre offering from WWE trying to do damage control. And he said, bye. And he just left. So yeah, that's really bad how WWE handled that situation. That you basically tell a guy, go to rehab before the test result comes back. Think about that for a second. We want you in rehab. Well, what did the test say? Well, we don't know. Just go to rehab. Like, what? What is wrong? I want you in rehab, you son of a bitch. You hear Vince right now. Just like, what is that? Like, screw you. You're fired. That hurts. That really hurts doing that. But, I don't even think Vince can sound like that anymore if he tried. It's pretty sad watching Vince now. It really is sad. So, let me see. Where am I? talked about the ratings. How about the sign in the crowd? What was that about? Some AEW fans are just really like embarrassing to themselves and anyone around them. Guy has a sign that says, "Rub my bald head for good luck." I'm like, what? That's the sign you came up with? Rub my bald head for good luck. Really? No one did, by the way. I don't think anyone did go over to him. So, you know, like, rub my shaved nuts for good luck. You know what I mean? What the fuck? And Rampage is officially a throwaway show. It's officially a throwaway show. Now, I know they had a... Look, they were wise because they didn't give you anything great. Because Rampage this Friday night aired after the NCAA tournament at 11:30. I didn't check the rating. I'm sure it probably didn't even register. I'm sure it was very bad. But the show itself is just... aside from the Keith Lee and Max Caster, who... What a, another rap. Another. I mean, Caster's amazing on the mic with his raps. Just gold. The things he says. But the match itself, I mean, the finish of the match, then you get like chaos after Keith Lee wins. Then you have Hobbs comes down and Starks comes down and they attack Keith Lee, and then more people come attack Keith Lee. It's like, and then Jericho on commentary saying it's not fair that they were attacking Keith Lee like that. Like, aren't you a heel now? Why would you? So you're not trying to be a partial heel. Oh, wait. Well, if we attack people, it's cool, but they shouldn't do it. Chris Jericho, what the fuck, bro? Do you hear what you're saying sometimes? Have some consistency. That's why he should not be on commentary. That is exactly why. You're trying to push a new character, bro. It's unfair. What? Pat Kenny, some sad news. Known to the world as Simon Diamond, the ECW fans from 20 years ago remember him, Simon Diamond. He suffered a mild stroke on Friday. He's not going to attend this current weekend's Crockett Cup. Kenny is the director of talent relations there, so let's wish him a speedy recovery. A personal friend of mine from 20 years ago who I met from a college buddy at Hofstra University, Kyle Davis, who's been their interviewer and other things. Hey, he wears a lot of hats in the NWA. He's going to take over for Kenny in an interim basis. So, you know, I've always talked about the fact that I know Kyle Davis. I've always said I want to get him on the show. I just have to find a way to do that because, you know, obviously working in the business, it's a good mind to talk to. And I know for a fact he does a really good Mick Foley impersonation, so it would be nice to have him on here doing that, which was, by the way, the Cactus Jack from ECW, if you remember the classic interview or promo where he's backstage talking about Mikey Whipwreck and the Doritos, about Mikey not being in shape. It's Doritos, Mikey. You reach. I can't do it. I can't do justice to it. One of the few impressions I won't even try is Cactus Jack, but he nails it, so I'd like to get Kyle Davis on the show to talk about that. But yeah, that wraps up another edition of Morton's Law Podcast. Thank you guys for checking me out. Listen, 2 weeks in a row, I came, I conquered, and I'll be back for next week. Enjoy the rest of this NCAA tournament. Oh, look at this. Duke is going to hang on and advance to the Sweet 16, up by 6 with 16 seconds to go. So Coach K advances. And yeah, thanks again, everybody. See you guys next week. God bless gay sex.